So, and you know, at some point when a product had just been released, probably before I was there, they decided to move into this place and sign the lease, and they were locked into it. And I said, okay, well, Mark, you just have to find someone to take over the lease. Yeah. So that was the first thing that he did. I was responsible for finding out how long it would take us to put together the whole package, put everything in place to make the package, find out who we were going to ship it, find out how to make it even cheaper. So that was what I did. And Virginia Duan, her first task was to find a less expensive place to move to for the interim.
Right. And so where did you go then? Now you got to find some place to produce the CDs and put the whole package together. What companies did you end up landing with?
Well, I did a whole lot of research on CD manufacturing, and it was something that was completely new to me. But it was just a matter of putting in the requests, letting people know how many we were expecting to print, and how long it was going to take, and find out where they were. I must have talked to, you know, I probably spent 2 weeks just on the phone and driving to meet people to find out who could actually handle the capacity. I ended up with a gentleman at UAG, which is in North Hollywood, and they had a track record and were able to prove to me that they would be able to do it. And we ended up getting those. I think the CDs cost somewhere on the order of 54 or 60 cents a piece.
Right.
We were looking at a whole lot of different packaging methods. And I had worked in an e-commerce site even before Aesop, that was where we sent all kinds of things via USPS and UPS, so I was pretty familiar with that, and I figured out that we could do things the cheapest with a certain way of packaging. The hardest thing, though, was what to do with these ended up being 20 CDs. And I went through this process of searching through all these different, you know, methods of where to find the cheapest things, and I ended up with Big Lots Wholesale, who I will now use till the end of my days.
And what's it called? Big what?
There's a store in the U.S. called Big Lots. It used to be called Pick and Save.
Okay.
And they take excess inventory and sell it in their retail stores at hugely discounted prices.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of times when you go into a Big Lots store, you'll find, you know, it's strange experimental food products, you know, or flavors of things that you never imagined.
Okay.
Some of it's great and some of it's really not. Yep. You know, a lot of things were deleted for a reason, but the prices are always super low.
Uh-huh.
And but they have this sort of secret wholesale business, and I was able to find these really high quality. And they're made by, I think they were made by Case Logic or CD Projects. This CD case for only, they were like $1.20 a piece.
Right.
It was incredible. I mean, it was. Less than using 20 paper sleeves, and the thing looked really professional.
Cool.
So then we had to figure out how to get all these things shipped and stored, and I set up a process because we had people who had been programmers, and now they were, instead of doing assembly language, they were doing the assembly line of putting these things together and
right.
putting the documentation in and taping and putting on labels. Through that whole process, we're also moving the office out of the tens of thousands of dollars a month rent to someplace I think that cost us about less than $1,000 a month.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was a drastic change.
Everything's happening all at once.
Yeah, it was a huge lesson, I think, for Mark on my part in frugality.
Yeah.
Which is something that I was lucky enough to be raised around.
Fantastic.
And then once we started shipping these things out, and after I did the artwork, which is all new to me, and CD mastering, we did all that in-house. We didn't outsource any of that. And half the time there would be shipments of things, and I'm driving back and forth and just carrying everything myself in a Honda Civic.
Oh gosh. Just, that's definitely not a moving van.
Right. Just to get the product out. We have pallets that are being of product that are being delivered to our landlord's house, because the new office is the back house behind the house. And we're breaking down pallets in the middle of this residential street and carrying boxes and assembling them. It was a really fun, crazy time.
That's cool.
And at the same time, I'm there trying to deal with people who've received the package and are trying to get these scripts implemented, and there were pieces that were missing. And at that point, half of the people who had programmed these scripts in the first place had already left the company,
right,
either because they'd been told that it would be in their best interest to find something, so they did. So it was a matter of digging through and taking a crash course in learning how Perl scripts work, because that's what most of these things were programmed in. And I wasn't familiar with Perl at all, and making the right connections. Luckily, Nick Temple, who was one of the first people to sign up for the package and is an expert developer, was willing to take on some of these duties, and we really worked together a lot to make sure that that everything that was necessary to put some of these into place was released and found and distributed.
So was this kind of Aesop marketing? Was it kind of Mark's baby, or was it something where everybody was involved, in the input of the company?
It really was Mark's baby. At least up until the end of the Guerrilla Marketing Network. Mark, at that point when I first joined the company, he was still in this mindset of just, he'd have an idea and he would act on it right away.
Uh-huh.
Now, sometimes, or very often, the follow-through just wasn't there because he didn't have time to keep up with everything.
Right.
Sometimes, like with the Start Blaze, with Exit Blaze, with his first print book, Mind Control Marketing, we were able to carry out a campaign and really successfully. I mean, some of those accomplishments were truly amazing. And but other times he would have projects that were fabulous ideas, and he would just have the idea one day, and he understands computers well enough to kind of map it out, and he'd call in a programmer, and he had somewhere 15 or 20 developers on staff at all times, and he'd call in somebody and say, I want you to do this, forget whatever you were just doing.
Okay.
And so that project would sit at maybe 80% complete.
Right.
Other times, they'd even be done with it. Like, or maybe even the system was, but perhaps Swiss Army app. There were a couple of those that were Windows-based products. Uh-huh. that were were done. They were ready to be promoted, but they simply couldn't make the promotion schedule because all of a sudden this took over.
Right.
He had some really awesome viral ideas. Like one of them was called Spread the Happy.
Okay.
This was a site, and he had a designer put it together, and it had this really fun smiley face and psychedelic flowers kind of look to it.
Uh-huh.
And the idea was you earn points by spreading the happy, which was emailing your friends like a positive message or a hey, what's up, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of a predecessor to MySpace. And,
okay.
And you've seen that, you know, the kind of success that they've had. And what is it that MySpace really allows people to do? It's a giant guest book, you know?
Right.
And that was sort of on the order of what this was, except that you would earn points by sending these things out. This is one of the great secrets of viral tactics. This was what made StartBlaze and ExitBlaze really work.
Uh-huh.
Is it's a pyramid, you know, it's like affiliate marketing. It's like network marketing.
Uh-huh.
But you're not dealing with dollars. The thing that's in the pyramid is something that you've made up. It's points. It's, you know, rewards or it's clout.
Okay.
These are things that will motivate people to take action, but doesn't get them in that mindset of feeling like they've been, you know, gypped if the person under them doesn't reciprocate it.
Right. So what happens with these points then? You get, you know, 100 million points, then what do you do with these points?
You know, I never even got that far into the project. There were a number of things that that could have been done with this. You know, it could have been either you get discounts somewhere, or you just get a new title, or you get to see like a flash animation or whatever it is.
Okay. Yeah.
And people will do all kinds of crazy things for the most useless junk.
So these points actually have no value. You can never cash them in for actual dollars.
You know, as the way that it was originally designed, I don't think that there was ever any redeeming value other than your own satisfaction.
Okay.
But if we had taken that particular project and been able to put a little more effort into it, I mean, even 2 days on the phone with Mark's, you know, connections and our ability to write compelling business-to-business copy, it could have had, you know, advertiser supported incentives at the end of it,
just to
promote that viral method. And but that was one of the things that just completely got shelved and was never promoted. It only ever existed in this beta state. And that there were so many projects that really never got to see the light of day, even though they were fabulous ideas.
So Mark was really very much an ideas guy, but not so much a detail-oriented individual.
You know, he is a detail-oriented person. He is, and I would not want to fault him that. If there's anything that I can say about the Mark Joyner of 2 years ago that was a weakness, it was his ability to incur overhead.
Okay.
And that's what I went, one of the major things that I went to Walmart to learn and to be more adept at.
So you went to Walmart to learn how to not incur as much overhead.
Right.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Find out how a successful business can be run efficiently on the least amount of overhead.
Excellent. So what did you learn then from Mark? What was the kind of the biggest thing that you could say that you learned while you were working with him?
while I was working with him. You know, really, I think the best thing that I learned while I was there was copywriting. I was lucky enough to have access to all those marketing materials because, you know, when I joined the company, they were already selling, I think, somewhere on the order of 50 e-books. When I went to the interview, I was given a copy of Mind Control Marketing. And, you know, that's where I was introduced to Joe Vitale. That's where I learned about the Robert Collier Letter book. I read everything by Joe. I read David Garfinkel, and I read Ted Nicholas, and I read Joe Sugarman. And I subscribed to everything that Mark had and did, and I was able to see on the inside what kind of response each of those things had.
I was
involved with sending out these mailings, and it's, you have two different messages side by side. One of them is a direct approach, one of them is a little more long-winded roundabout approach, and you get to see which ones work and which ones don't, and that information was really invaluable.
So what did you find was working the best? Was it more the direct approach, couple of paragraphs, or was it more the 5-6 long, kind of 5-6 paragraphs long copy approach?
You know, there isn't any rule to it. I've heard some people are always into short copy and some people are always into long copy. I can only say that right now I can recognize, looking at something based on who I know the audience is, who's writing it, and what kind of backing they have, whether their copy appears to me too long or too short. Some things require a direct approach. Some things require a roundabout approach. It really has to go on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. Can you give us some examples? What would require a short copy as opposed to long copy?
Usually, if you are giving something away for free, mm-hmm. or something at a low price point, shorter copy is going to be sufficient.
Okay.
People usually simply won't spend the time on something that's long copy if the perceived value isn't even that high.
Okay.
You'll usually just lose your reader.
Right.
Most of the products that we're dealing with in internet marketing and selling business information tended to go for long copy.
Uh-huh. So would it be kind of a rule of thumb to say that if you're selling a product with a low price point, you could go a short copy? If you're selling a product with a higher price point, like the Farewell package, for example, up at about $1,000, that would be more of a long copy type thing? So the price, low price point, short copy, high price point, long range copy.
Yes, that's a tendency. Of course, there are exceptions, but that is a tendency. The more complex your product is, probably the higher price and also the longer copy you'll need. A lot of viral mechanisms, though, really require shorter copy.
Right.
Usually with a viral mechanism, you're also dealing with something that's either free or incredibly low cost.
Right, yeah. So basically to get it out as quickly as possible, get people just to get a two-minute opinion of it and take action and get it
mm-hmm.
out to their friends.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
I haven't come across anything for which an advertorial does not work.
Okay. So basically an advertorial kind of carte blanche works for everything.
Yes.
In general speaking, of course.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe explain what is an advertorial as opposed to sending out a direct marketing message.
an advertorial is, and this, the way that I define it is, an article, an informative article that is written, which conveniently mentions your product or service. Your advertorial should be written from a news standpoint and have a news angle to it.
Okay.
So instead of here's why you should buy my product, it's announcing new way to do this.
Okay.
That is the advertorial. And it's not the only way to write copy, but it's one that really will work to a pretty amazing degree in almost any situation.
Why is that?
Psychologically, people let this pass their radar. We're used to reading news.
Uh-huh.
We look at news as entertainment. We trust the people who write news. We don't trust advertisers, but we trust editors, and we trust journalists a whole lot more than we trust advertisers.
Gotcha.
We're eager for more information. The internet is information. No matter what else happens on the internet, it will always be the place where verbal word communication took place, you know. And most people who are reading email newsletters or going to news sites are looking for this kind of information, and that's why the advertorial gets past them. It gets through most of those objections.
So not such a blatant sales message.
Right. And the other thing is, it's if you write your advertorial correctly, every reader should be enriched by it. They should be more informed about something.
Right.
I'll always come back to Joe Vitale, but my favorite piece, my absolute favorite piece by him is the intro copy to the Hypnotic Writer's Swipe File, or Hypnotic Writing Swipe File.
Uh-huh.
And this is a piece of copy that's that was obviously written really quickly.
Uh-huh.
And when I first read that, even though I already had access to, I think I had a PDF of the thing on my hard drive already, but I'd never even opened it because, you know, it didn't really make any sense to me.
Right.
You know. But once I read that copy,
uh-huh,
I was ready to buy that product at $200 again.
To buy it again?
Yes. I would have bought the thing again.
Wow.
And, you know, the same thing happened later on with the Attractor Factor. I remember getting that email, and it said, this is an updated version of spiritual marketing. It's, you know, the core information is the same. But I still bought the book anyway, and it turned out to be one of the best things in my life. But you have to read, if you have any interest in copy, you have to read the story of the Hypnotic Writing Monkey.
Okay.
Which
yeah.
is what the sales copy is. When you read that, you cannot help but suddenly know something about copywriting that you didn't know before.
Uh-huh.
You know how to use the product. Now, that's another thing that I've been thinking about, and I'll reveal it to your listeners.
Okay.
Just in the most concise form.
Cool.
If you write good copy,
uh-huh,
your reader should be able to throw away the instruction manual.
Wow.
Now, conversely, instruction manuals tend to be the absolute worst copy ever.
Yes.
From a copywriting standpoint, when you read an instruction manual, it's boring, it's not particularly well laid out, you know, it's maybe a reference manual if you have to come back to something later.
Mm-hmm.
But when you read copy, you should already be able to picture in your mind exactly how you will use the product, I mean, what buttons you will press or when you will be typing. When you're finished with that, when you're finished with reading that, if you don't already know how that product is going to work for you and what the first step is, once you know, if it's software, you should know exactly what you're going to see and what you're going to click on first when you open the program.
Right, yeah.
You know, if your copy doesn't do that, then you really need to revisit it and think about what kind of information is going to go in there.
Isn't that going to make your copy extremely detailed, though?
Well,
you'll
it
have
should.
An entire reference manual on your sales page.
I'm exaggerating. You know, there will be times where people need to go back to the reference manual or take advanced tutorials.
But sure.
The beginner's guide. Should be incorporated into your selling process.
Okay.
And if you do that, I promise you, your refund rate will be way lower. Your customer service rate will go down.
Because people know exactly what they're getting beforehand.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or they will know how to help themselves. If they know that they're trying to do this, they know then to, you know, to look in the frequently asked questions and find this. But so many times you're sold into buying something because it's popular or the person who's promoting it you have a lot of respect for. Whatever reasons you have for buying something, you know, it's on sale, but you really don't understand how it's going to work for you.
Right, yeah.